Hi, folks. Welcome to the analysis, commentary, recap of episode 5 of the Netflix Tour de France Unchained series. I got it. There's a lot of takes and mess ups in this.
That's why I have this smirk on my face.
We're done. You just had a snack. You had a trail mix. Yeah. You had a margarita.
No, I'm having a margarita. I haven't finished it yet.
Oh, she's still working on that. I wanted to get some red wine and call it Thibaut Pinot Syrah. If I was Thibaut Pinot, if you're listening, he has a farm already. Grow some vines and then offer everything but Pinot. Thibaut Pinot Merlot, Thibaut Pinot Cabernet. I think you could own that. I don't know if they'd find that funny in France. Oh, my face is swollen. I was stung by a bee in my cheek. If I look weirder than normal. So this episode was about the Alpe d'Huez stage.
Yeah.
That's a plan you've heard of, correct? As a non-Tour de France person.
Yeah. I don't know when I first...
I bet you pay enough attention to the tour, not on purpose, that you've heard of Alpe d'Huez. That'd be my guess.
No, I have. Definitely,
yeah,
I have.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm just trying to think where you got it from.
Is it cycling related, or did I just know because it's kind of...
Ooh, I don't know if there's anything else. Oh, I mean, there's for sure skiing up there.
Yeah, it's a known spot.
I'm going to say it's 90% known for cycling. But it gets a whole episode for Netflix, and I'm going to say it deserves it. I'm going to say Alpe d'Huez earned it. And then especially the race, the way that year played out, also deserved it. It starts with they're on the massage table in the Ineos hotel room. So it's Karen. The massage table, it's the only time that you actually get to relax. There's the bus buzzing around, and there's all the phone, and the obviously the race, and the food, and there's meetings. But the massage table, normally they'll have two guys to a room, so they'll say, like, here's your massage time, and there'll be two soigneurs doing dual massages. And that's the only time you actually get to chill. And I always would say, like, even if there's no physiological benefit to the massage, like, that hour of your life is so important mentally that it's worth it just for that. Like, I don't know what's going on in my muscles and my legs.
I think that's part of the joy of a massage is also it's mental.
Yeah, and it's like you can't – although, like – we would like sit there on our phones and text while you're in there. You do it every day. And like, some of us, you know, you got emails to deal with and there's no
Everybody
other time to do it.
Everybody needs an hour to themselves a day.
Right. But it's an hour to yourself while someone's rubbing your legs. So they, Ineos used this to, they had their director in there kind of talking to Garrett during his massage. That was a time for like an impromptu team meeting. Steve Cummings is, I forgot he was Ineos director. That dude was so good. As like, and not just like strong, but like bike racing savvy. He won a lot of stages out of breakaways, which is always like kind of an art form. It's like, how do you know that move is going to be the break? And then how do you make sure you're the best out of it? And are you going to win from a sprint? Are you going to win solo? And like that's a hard thing to do. And he was remarkably consistent at it. And it's one like, yeah, I would hire him too if I was Ineos. I forget which race it was, but Ben King was in a break with Steve, like peak Steve Cummings, and he was like, as soon as the break started, Steve was somehow behind the biggest guy and in front of the smallest guy. He's getting the best draft, and he's like doing the thing where you kind of like launch through with a little bit of momentum when it's your turn, so you're not giving the guy behind you anything. And it was like the break had barely started, and Ben was like, he's going to win. There's nothing you can do about it. That was Steve Cummings. So it's like, yeah, he's directing Ineos at the tour. There's probably a bidding war for that dude when he retired for his directing services, which probably I can't think of a lot of riders who were just like that savvy, that solid. They also, Ineos sort of talks about their domestique thing. And it's funny because the last episode I talked about how like JV loves to remind the audience that he doesn't have as much money as Ineos. And then you look around, which I roll my eyes at, but you look around at like their roster of domestiques and they've got Tom Pidcock. Like they're Dylan Van Barlo, like casually in a scene, like they don't even talk to him or recognize him. Like he had just won Roubaix 2 months before this. So he's here like to get water bottles for the other guys. So like they're Ineos's domestique, for sure Pidcock. Van Barlo now, is he got paid a lot more after that Roubaix win. I'm guessing last year's contract and this year's contract a little bit different for old Dylan. Great dude, stoked for Dylan. But the but my it's just weird to look at, like, yeah, he's a domestique, but he's probably making more salary than like anyone on EF with the possible exception of Rigo, but I wouldn't be surprised if Pidcock's making more than Rigo. So, all right, you get that one, JV.
So I know why you don't like EF, but why don't you like EF?
There was a couple comments asking. I could write a book about this topic. No, it's not fair. My relationship with EF is complicated, as is my relationship with JV. So I was on that team two separate times, which means so there was this 2014 and 16. They say that part of being an adult is being able to have different feelings about the same thing. And JV like might be the best example of my life when it comes to that. So on the one hand, like, JV was the first person to figure out, like, oh, cycling has a doping problem that everybody knows about. It's costing us sponsors. So I'll give him credit for that. You know, was that because he's smart or because he's a good guy? I don't know how that, you know, pie is cut up. But still, like, a great thing that he did and figured out. And that did build a lot of momentum for teams being transparent and teams not, you know, having blood bags all over the bus. But then I could also feel the same way that my personal experience on that team was JV is also a guy who will in April say that you're back on the team and tell your agent that that you're going to get $70,000 salary, and he tells him that over the phone. That's not in writing anywhere. And then for the next 7 months, you're waiting for a contract. And, you know, every 2 weeks, like, hey, JV, just ready for that contract that you said. And then at the end of the year, when you couldn't possibly talk to their team anyway, he sends a contract for $60,000. That's all. That's just, I don't know what that is. And then being fired by ghosting at the end of the year. It's not, and I'm not the only one to be, I don't know if JV's ever fired anyone in the history of, we're talking like hundreds of riders at this point. But it was one of those, like, at the end of the year, like, you know, you've sweat for a person, you've had some road rash, you've done your job, and, like, obviously you're hoping to get renewed. And fine, like, don't renew me, but, like, go ahead and, like, send a text, like, hey, appreciate your service, best of luck, gotta go another direction. That's all, and, you know, I don't need a plaque. And it's one of those, like, at some point it does feel personal when someone, like, can't give you that. So that's how I feel about it. Yeah. But on the other hand, like, a bunch of my friends were and are on that team. They hire a bunch of good dudes. They're fun. I like their whole vibe. So that's, you know, I feel multiple ways about the same thing because I'm an adult. But that's the backstory. And if anyone wants 270 pages on it, there's draft annals.
I hate ghosting.
It's rude. Yeah, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah, don't ghost.
No, don't ghost.
Just be honest.
Just
don't be a coward.
Just say, like, you know, you flossed at the dinner table and I found that disgusting and I don't ever want to go out with you again. Or go, like,
yeah,
you eat the chocolate out of the trail mix and then you put the trail mix back. No, I'm not going to break up with you for that. I don't even want, that is the best part of the trail mix, obviously, but just throw the whole bag out when you're done with the chocolate.
No, because I eat nuts too.
Oh, you're going to eat, hang on. You're going to eat the chocolate out of it and then you're going to eat the rest of it later?
Yeah, I might.
Now it's just a bag of granola.
I'm not wasteful.
Okay, all right, respect. That's fine.
Sometimes I want chocolate and sometimes I want nuts. And I just happen to have the two things in one bag.
Okay, all right. I'm glad we got through that. They've got Rigo on the team. Rigo's so much fun. He's A-list Colombian dude and he deserves it. And he's a character. It's a blast. He's good with the camera. And they do a flashback to Magnus Cort stage. I think if I didn't know the order in which things happen in the tour, I wouldn't be like, wait, are they not going to mention that? Are they going to get to this part? Did they just skip right over? I think they're going to tie everything up in a bow eventually. And I think there's not going to be too much snubbing. There will be some snubbing. Pogacar entirely snubbed. Have you noticed that the guy who was winning the race for the first whatever half of it and finished second overall, like, not barely in there?
Yeah,
it's intentional. I don't know what, you know, his team didn't give Netflix access. I don't know what the behind the scenes goes on with that. I guess his team isn't trying to sell any Emirates. I don't know how you buy an Emirate, and that's probably the problem. But I think they mentioned that he won stages, but, like, not really. They don't really show much of it. They're like, oh, okay, you're not going to give us access, then we're going to minimize anything you possibly do. It feels aggressive how much they left out Pogacar, who's, like, also, like, a good character, good at the camera, like, kind of funny. And they probably knew that too, and they would have wanted him in. Also snubbing Trek. There is no Trek in this series so far. I don't think that's going to happen. We're at episode, we just finished, there's two left, and there's been zero mention of Trek bicycle racing team.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's and that, for sure that was one of those like Netflix says, you know, we need X hours with you, and I don't know if Trek would want money for that or why they wouldn't want to be exposed to an audience. But it's an odd choice.
Talking about them.
Exactly. Or except we are talking about them. Don't
so
buy a Trek.
Missing out on anything.
Yeah.
Maybe they made the right choice then.
All right, they show a good bit of Nilsen Palace. It's kind of how they frame of the Altuez stage. You remember Nilsen? I ran into him in Nice when we were down there a couple months ago on the bike path. Very pleasant dude, very nice guy. Gets into him personally and his like poor little apartment with no furniture in it that he just moved into, and his girlfriend. It's one of those like, yeah, that's what it is. Like that's the life. He talks very briefly about trying to get skinny, which was one of those, like, I noticed that. It's funny, like, they're not going to get into how, you know, cycling as a sport has kind of a problem with that.
Yeah. You talk about race weight.
Yeah. I forget exactly how to word it, but it was like I'm surprised they let that get in there at all. Touchy subject. They didn't harp on it, but they also didn't edit that part out. It shows Nielsen trying to get into the breakaway on the Altuez stage. And it's interesting, like, the getting into the breakaway is such a weird gamble, crapshoot, matter of force. Like, it's really hard to explain when someone says get in the break, because there's an element that's just random. You don't know if it's going to go immediately. You don't know if it's going to go after an hour of argy-bargy, you know? I didn't make up the argy-bargy term. But piss and vinegar is what we would say. Like, here's just an hour of, like, everybody's attacking and no one's... So what happens is... The leader, the team of the GC leader, they're in charge of when the breakaway goes in, because they're the one who chases on the front. So in that team bus, they're being told, okay, we'll let a total of, and it usually just goes by number, they don't care who it is, they're like a little, total of four guys up the road, as long as it's from not from this team or this team, because what they would want is the team who's second overall. They don't want that. They don't want one of their guys in the break, because if something goes messy, they want that team at the chase too. On a stage like Altuez, they probably wouldn't care. People are so far down and they're going to lose time. Like, give the break 20 minutes. It could be 30 guys and there's so much time for it to come back. So that's what Nielsen's looking at. It's like, he's supposed to make the breakaway, but how the heck do you guess? So he just does the, like, sort of panic move, but, like, sometimes the gun goes off and four guys go and a wall of dudes blocks the race, and that's the whole thing. Like, that happens just as often as the piss and vinegar for the first 2 hours version. Mm-hmm. But so you see Nelson, like, doing the, not like a rookie thing, but just like he's not confident in his ability to make the breakaway. So he's going first, and he's hoping that they'll, like, he's not trying to go solo. He's and you can hear on the radio, they're telling him to, like, manage his effort, is Wigelius's phrase. And that's saying, like, don't bury yourself to get a 5 minute gap. Try to stay 20 seconds ahead of the group and let five more guys come across to you. And that'll be the breakaway. That's a sustainable situation for Nielsen. And he does that. It works out, and he sort of achieves that break. But it's just, no, what a mess to try and figure that. And then compare that with Pidcock, who they're like, okay, Tom, you can get in the breakaway. And he's so confident, he's not worried about missing the breakaway. That's Nielsen's problem. Is he's afraid, like, oh, six guys are going to go and I'm not in there.
Yeah.
Tom Pidcock doesn't give a shit if six guys go, because he knows that he can do something completely insane. Maybe he doesn't know, but he knew enough to try and bridge to himself. It's like, I would do this when I was, like, winning national level races, and I'd go to, like, a local race that I was just doing for prize money. I would have this, like, I'm not going to miss the breakaway because I am the breakaway. Like, that'd be like a joke that I would say, like, I can get across whatever I want, whatever I can, because I'm that much better than these dudes. Pidcock is doing that on the hardest stage of the Tour de France. It's mind boggling. And then you see him, and he does it also insane. He does it on a descent.
That
the
descent
entire
was insane. I was so nervous.
He doesn't
that.
Attack before the,
like,
top.
I knew nothing was going to happen.
Right.
But I still was so nervous.
Oh, your palms are sweaty. Yeah, there's no guardrail going down that. There's no, the speeds are crazy. He mentions it himself. One of those, like, he comes off a little bit cocky, where he's like, I'm a multidiscipline world champion. It's just like, nah, you could be cocky then. Like, he did say that to the camera at one point, because he's mountain bike, cyclocross. It's like, yeah, okay, you know, you're allowed to be cocky. It's a weird, go on, Pidcock. Yeah, he's a baby.
How do you win that much at such a young age?
I don't know. I guess you're don't look at me.
Yeah. Sorry.
I got a bee sting on my face. But the thing too is like when you're watching that descent, and that one, like they showed highlights of that over and over. There's the breakaways exploded. Like there was a breakaway already up the road, and he's just going through them like he's Pac-Man, and he's just like eating them up. Yeah. And the thing is, like, none of these guys are bad bike riders. Like, these are all world class bike riding expert descenders, and he's just going through them. You know, it's nuts. That's there's just nothing to say. That's a guy who's just like on a mission. You know, like maybe he's low to the ground, he's a little more, but he's not heavy, so like he doesn't have that speed, but he has maybe more aerodynamics and then a lower center of gravity if you're short. But like, really, there's no advantage other than just
of all those factors. Sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, that's fine.
Of all those factors, what would help the most?
I think the multidisciplinary world champion is the part that sets you apart here. Because like,
okay.
No, but that's the thing. I think it's just skill and comfort and confidence and like being that switched on where there's one thing, like as a road racer, I'll rip a turn, I'll lean into whatever, and I'm perfectly comfortable until the moment that my tire skips a corner. You know what I mean? Like that's where the line is for like guys who are exclusive road. Pidcock, cyclocross, mountain bike, like they're comfortable sliding their tire around, whatever the fuck. That's a whole different thing. And he's doing that on the, and I don't know, I guess maybe he hasn't had a lot of bad crashes. Whatever it is, I hate to say it's really just like skill. It's not experience. It's not hours. Because those other guys have done more than him. It was his first tour. He makes sure he knows his first Grand Tour or his first Tour de France. Sounds cocky? Be cocky. You're Tom Pidcock. It's got cock right in there. I might edit that out.
Yeah, you probably should. Why do you want to be in the break?
That's a good question because there's kind of almost no reason for it a lot of time. This stage, Pidcock wins from the breakaway. And that does happen where you win that. But that's like, say every team is in the breakaway except yours. That means your team, it's your responsibility to pull because you're not going to win out of the breakaway. So there's like a chest to that. And then take in the interests of the different jerseys and the different placements. So like maybe there's a guy who's sixth overall who's in the breakaway. Ineos is going to be like, crap, now we're danger to lose our third overall. So we got to pull and Jumbo gets a day off. Because they'd have to pull, but like, oh crap, Garen's third overall is at stake, so they're going to bring it back to. So there's all of that going on. Normally, like being in the breakaway is just a good way to sweat all day and then lose 2 minutes at the end. It's just going to be way harder.
But
there's dudes who that's their job, and
I'm getting paid to do it, I guess. But
yeah, okay, all right. So you are in the breakaway.
No. My salaries. My asking. is high.
I loved Pidcock peeing during the race.
Yeah.
Well,
it's just like not even trying to be discreet. I thought you guys tried to be discreet.
No, here's the thing is you do. It's a weird thing. Like everyone pees during the stage, like 100%. And what you do is you pick a side of the road and you're like a gradual downhill. You don't want too fast of a downhill, but you don't want an uphill. If it's a flat, you know, you're going to get dropped a little bit, but there's so many cars, not a big deal. But you'll just pick a side and you'll pee into the shoulder. And usually, like, a lot of the guys will pee at the same time. So you got, like, kind of a little pack to merge back in. And it's neutralized, it's fair, and you pick a part of the race where there's no stress.
Okay.
So you'll do it once at the beginning, like, more or less, like, after the breakaway goes. They're like, okay, now it's pee-pee time. And then that's what they say. But it's understood. And then another one, maybe like before the last hour, before the racing picks up again, you know, you want to kind of like, you don't want to be sitting there exactly what Pidcock says. Like, I don't want to think about having to pee. No one's discreet about it. But the thing is, when you're in the break, there's a camera on you. They didn't have to show him peeing. I wonder if Nielsen or their guys, like, I think they probably all would have peed, but maybe not. Because at breakaway, it's tough to make yourself pee when like, you know, you're off the front. And then you're literally like giving time away if you're trying to stick it. And Pidcock's on a mission. Cock's right in the name.
I don't think I could pee off the bike. I mean, you know, if I could, I don't think I could.
Women stop and there's like a neutralized stop and they all drop trowel. That's the move in the women's race.
Okay.
It does take practice. It does take like training to like let your body relax that muscle.
Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely like, a thing that like young riders have to learn, but like if you can't pee during a race, like you're you're an idiot. Like, you can't be world tour if you can't pee off the bike. I remember practicing it in training when I was a cat too. It's like, before I get my cat one, I better learn how to pee during the race. Absolutely.
You just rode around the block?
No, the bike path in Gainesville, Florida. Exactly. That's why I was just waving it at traffic. No, you pick a place and you know, it's
it's in Gainesville, Florida. That's a good place to pee on.
Exactly. It's already a swamp. It's humid. No one's going to notice. So they show Nielsen getting dropped. And it was one of those, like, they kind of imply that was from his effort early on, whatever, maybe, like he'll win a stage one day. That's fine. Nielsen's, he's young, he's good. He'll do that.
Was that his first tour?
I think so. I believe so. Last year he won the Japan Cup at the end of the year, which is like, that's like the last race. It's a super cool race to win. Japan Cup. It's like the fans are insane. They're like, you win that race. I was there and my teammate won, and the fans are buying your dirty jerseys off your back on the way back to the hotel for $200. But it's so cool. They're bringing you, like, I have a little statue of myself. Someone just gave that to me at the hotel. They just do like little drawings. They're always giving you gifts. It's just like, if you had to pick one race to win, that's like not a super prestigious world championship kind of thing. Like, it'd be so fun to be. You're never buying a drink again in that country.
I would have never guessed.
If you're Nielsen. Realized. And then I forget which race he won at the beginning of this year. When I ran into him in Nice, I was like, dude, it's awesome to, like, congrats. You've just been killing it lately. He's like, yeah, I had a good end of last season, a good beginning of this season. And I was like, that means you're just good, dude. I'm pretty sure. But like, he was like so humble about it, he couldn't accept the compliment. So when he wins one, we're going to be stoked about it. Froome was in the breakaway too. They don't even mention Froome. Who?
Yeah, I only knew because you pointed it out.
I think they mentioned his name once, but he was in the breakaway at the stage and like not really discussed, at least not on Netflix, as a threat. I think that's kind of the same thing with Pogacar. If Froome didn't participate in the interview, Netflix isn't going to do him any favors.
Sure. But they didn't even say his name.
No, for a guy who's won the tour many times, he gets no respect. But he was also like in the breakaway. A weird thing with him, like he won the tour a number of times, and then he had this horrible accident and just kind of didn't come back the same. So he was actually just announced that he wasn't selected for Israel's roster for this. He's not going to start the tour this year. Which I'm sure he was bummed about, but it's also like, you did enough. And I remember when he announced that, you know, I'm going to come back, he's like, I'm going to come back and win the tour again. And that, like, looking at his injuries, like, if you finish the tour again, that's a really lofty goal. Like, just being able to show up, is pretty damn good. So but it's also like, whatever you got to say to get yourself, you know, into the physical therapist, he's a Tour de France winner, which means he's a champion. He's also probably kind of insane.
How many tours has he raced?
A ton. I don't know how many he's actually participated in, but yeah, no, it would be maybe like 10. He knows what he's doing. He knows what the level is. He knows what the training is. None of that. But then at some point, like, you're in the breakaway, and Tom Pidcock is like riding through you.
I remember the first time I heard Chris Froome's name. It was from, I used to teach a 6:30 a.m. water aerobics class in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Okay.
Was he in the class?
No, but one of the older women that took the class, she just loved him. She loved watching bike racing, and she would always talk about Froome, and she had the biggest crush on Chris Froome.
Oh, there you go.
And that's how I ever knew who he was.
There you go. Well, and then he was training in Malibu.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, okay,
Suddenly he's a neighbor. Right. When Pidcock wins at podium, like, you could tell he's emotional. Like, he's done everything. He'll let you know that he's won multidisciplinary, but you could tell he's still stoked.
I liked him.
There we go. She likes him. As soon as you've got like a signature, the Contador, like, I don't want him to win a race. I don't want to see the, oh, here's my pistol. I want to seem like you give a shit, not you've rehearsed it.
He looks like he's still having fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. They also show, like, well after Pidcock has finished, Pogacar sprinting for, like, I think we're in like sixth place at this point. But now you're already 2+ minutes down. Or I don't know where you're going to get it back, but it's not with 10 meters to go. And then the episode ends like it began in the Ineos hotel room. You can see, this is the things that I noticed, is a lot of the teams they'll bring their own mattresses because sleep is important, and the French hotels might be crappy. So they're like before the thing. Some of them have mattress sponsors, but like someone's shouldering a mattress into each rider's hotel room.
They travel with their own.
There's a truck of mattresses. Yeah, you could see Alpecin, they had a mattress sponsor. Like Pidcock, his room had an air filter in it. You want they had like a plug-in air filter that someone's schlepping that all up there for them. That's the difference between a $40 million team and and JV's 12. They don't have air filters, I bet, on EF. I bet some maybe Rigo does and nobody else does. Rigo might have bought his own.
I'm more blown away by the mattress.
No, mattress, pillows. Like, I mean, sleep is like super important, and you know, it's like some straw mattress somewhere. It's one of those, like, it seems completely insane. It's like, oh, well, okay, I get it. But then you think about like the labor involved.
That's what seems.
It's wild. Yeah. But I don't know why. I thought the air filter was funny. It's just a little plug-in cylinder. Like, make sure Tom has the good, the good oxygen flowing through there.
You travel with a white noise machine.
I do. No, that's where do you think I learned that kind of thing from?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, sleep is important. I bring up everywhere I go. I bring a little plug-in white noise machine because you don't know what's going on. And I'm a horrible light sleeper. Well, next time I'm flying with a mattress. Deal with it.
I'm not helping you.
That's the end of episode 5. Episode 6 coming up. We're going to crank through these. We're cranking through them.
Cranking through.
All right. See ya.